Chapter 30. Lord Hrothgar spent some time every day showing Petra different parts of Hrothgar Abbey. One day he said, "May I show you my true obsession?" Of course Petra said yes, but she wondered if she was finally to see the darker side of this world. She followed him into a confusion of ticking sounds, to find three men in shirt sleeves completely concentrated on clockwork mechanisms. One young man at the long center table looked up and nodded with a slight smile. The other didn't twitch away from something he was doing to tiny pieces of shiny brass. A small older man working on something larger said, "My lord," but then returned to his work. "Clockwork," Lord Hrothgar said, "in all its forms." Petra could tell from the way he touched a piece of machinery that all this truly was an obsession, but also a love. "I've never even considered a clock," she confessed, "other than to be annoyed if someone forgot to wind it." "The mechanism is fascinating and constantly improved. I wish I would be alive in 200 years to see what is achieved by then." He took her on a tour of the room, but skillfully just long enough. He clearly knew most people didn't share his devotion to wheels, cogs, springs, and pendulums. Petra's interest grew when he came to the mechanical toys. He demonstrated a monkey that beat a drum, and a lady who danced to the music from a box beneath her feet. "I have people who find broken and neglected pieces, which I then put to rights." "You do this yourself?" she asked, sure she must be mistaken. "When I have the time. Sometimes I need help," he added, with a smile at the older man who smiled back. "I am only an amateur, but my work then needs a home." They moved on and came to a bird on the branch of a tree, a bird covered with feathers so that it seemed real. He pressed a switch and it came to life, turning its head and singing, and showing a red breast. It was a robin. A worm popped out of the tree trunk nearby, and the bird stopped singing to apparently swallow it. "It's charming," she said, trying to show no special reaction, though she knew with despair that the omniscient Dark Marquis had somehow learned too much. She saw his glance at her bodice and realized that she was wearing the cameo, that she'd done that too often. She'd said it was a memento of her mother, but it was not at all an Italian design. Careless, careless, careless. But how could anyone live constantly on guard? He said nothing else but picked up the now silent bird. "You may have this, if you like." A shiver went down her spine, but she knew he hadn't meant what she'd heard. When he made no other reference, Petra thanked him and carried the toy up to her room. Once there, she took off the brooch and put it away in a box that already contained a small treasure trove of trinkets, all gifts from her father. She had some more valuable jewellery now, too, kept for safety in Lord Hrothgar's safe. Her father, who was being wonderfully kind and who planned to acknowledge her before society and provide her with a generous dowry. She gathered that with this support, she could be fully accepted in society and could expect to make a good marriage, especially when so many wished to seek a close association with such a powerful man. From the very beginning, she hadn't been able to suppress the thought that perhaps Robin might be a suitable match, and might want to marry her. She wound up the toy again and set it singing, but it couldn't lighten her heart. Robin Bonchurch might be the only suitable husband for her. She'd tried to ignore the problem, but her courses were a week overdue. She sat, a hand over her eyes. How could this happen to her? She'd come so far, struggled so hard, and finally found the haven she sought. But now this, a shame that threatened everything. Soon she was going to have to confess. The Marquis would want to know the father, and she didn't see how she could lie. He would find Robin, if he hadn't already, and force him to the altar or to death. She'd begged him to fly free, but this would cage him. She inhaled and gathered herself. Robin had never stopped caring for her, and passion had flared between them at a touch. Perhaps he wouldn't mind too much. The pressing question was, should she confess before the Chainings' masquerade? That would allow her father to change his mind and not present his ill-born daughter to his world. No need to decide just yet, she weakly decided. It was always possible she was simply late for once in her life. Robin dedicated himself grimly to gathering in the strings of his earldom and regaining his physical strength and flexibility. Both were challenging. Again and again, he had to deal with people who had his interests at heart, but who couldn't quite accept that he was ready for his responsibilities. He realized that everyone, from servants to estate stewards, but also his family and perhaps himself, had not quite accepted that his father was dead. Here, Nantwich was a blessing, the proverbial new broom. Robin gave him a free hand, even though the man's enthusiasm could be exhausting. The secretary assumed Robin was interested in national and international affairs, and constantly presented him with articles, or even short essays on issues of the moment. Robin dutifully read them. He was unable to resist asking Nantwich to find out about Milan, and in particular the Daverio family. He received, within the day, an authoritative paper. Robin thanked him, skimmed through it, and discovered absolutely nothing of use, so he requested information about the Morcini family, and especially the current Conte di Purieri. That provided more interesting reading, if only because Robin hated Ludovico Morcini's guts. Unfortunately, it came accompanied by a very recent book on the major families of Milan, marked at the page with a picture. Petra's lover was a darkly handsome fellow with an elegant stance and smile. The smile didn't hide cold eyes, however. Robin hoped he choked on bile when he heard of Varz's death, and realized Petra had escaped. Thought of Purieri and visions of vengeance sent him back to Angelo's for some serious work on his sword play. Not bad, he said after a while, but he was running with sweat and his scar was burning. Not bad at all, sir, Angelo said, but to achieve your best you must apply yourself with more seriousness. Robin laughed wryly. That seems to be a general opinion, but by all means. By hard work in due course, I shall become the very epitome of everything. He also spent time at a Turkish bath, simply for heat and massage of his leg, however, and not for the other exercises available there. He was being oddly chased, and wouldn't be able to use his leg as an excuse much longer. For some reason, Ashot's masquerade had become a marked day in his mind. The Italian masquerade that was being organized by Teresa Cornalis, and thus felt like a connection to Petra, when it was no such thing at all. After that, he would move fully into his new life. He'd go north to tackle Eastern Court, and then on to his other properties. He'd resume his normal amusements. Perhaps he'd set up a long-term mistress, or even look for a bride. That business of waiting until he was 30 had been immature nonsense, though he begrudged any penny to Lady Fowler's fund for the moral reform of society. He didn't approve of a lot that went on in society, but the woman was a sour-faced killjoy who would have everyone on their knees and singing hymns from morn to night. That, after all, was why he, Christian, and Thorne had chosen her as benefactor, as a powerful deterrent. He'd sorted all out after the masquerade.